and transit electrical assembly.
Oh, well, I've already, some of these things I've been telling you happened then. I went down there, and that was interesting. We did these great big, what did we call them, jig boards, where we would, this was for experimental, mostly for the constellation, I think. We'd have to trace the conduit around like this, and then solder a plug on the end, and then they'd come in and take a photograph of it. And I think that was used in engineering some way. That was experimental, you see. But once in a while, when work was slow, they'd bring in something from the shop. Either it was because our work was slow, or they were so overcrowded. You know, in the shop, they had so many orders that was something that needed to get out. They'd bring it in. We'd just do straight soldering.
But otherwise, it was still part of that experimental
program
where prototypes basically were created.
Yes. And I remember they were building the constellation up the road in Building 124, I think it was called. And for a brief time, one of the men, and then they had been taking this one woman, and I've forgotten why they quit having her go. Anyway, I went. And we'd go in this experimental truck. See, Lockheed always had trucks or things running around. They had this experimental truck that took parts from B1 up to this other building, because most of these parts were fabricated there. And I went up there, and I had to fill out the wire cards. And the tubing cut, they would mock up a tube, and then they had to put down on it, of course it had the part number, and whether it was hydraulic or what in the world it was, and you'd put down there how many inches to where it was bent, and all that. See, all these things that we had in production, now I begin to find out how they came by, and this was mock-up. A lot of this, I think some people think that engineers just sit there and plan this whole thing. That's not the way it was done. That's not the way it's done. Now, I don't mean that we don't need engineers, because we do, because they give out the order, but some of this actual fine point, the whole thing is done in what they call mock-up. And so I had to do some of the recording on the wire cards and the plumbing cards. And that was the first time I had something quite easy. I liked that. That was kind of fun.
But in other words, you basically stayed with an experimental, moving out of the sheet metal section into electrical.
Into electrical. Oh, yes, I was still in experimental.
But physically, it was the same area, the same supervisory staff.
No, it was a different building. See, the sheet metal was in one building, and electrical was up near the cotton shed. It was a different building, but we had the same foreman. We had a different supervisor, but same foreman, and I'm quite sure we had the same, I know it was the same department. It was the same.
Now, when you say it was a different building, does that mean that the building would have been smaller than, say, what the final assembly where the plane was?
No, it was a great big building.
It was a big hangar.
It was a hangar. Oh, yes. They'd have airplanes in there once in a while, but they'd be airplanes they were working on, usually doing some kind of mock-up on. I remember they did some P-38 mock-up there. And then let's see, what year was that? As while I was, excuse me. The P-38 was doing such a great job. It was so fast and everything, but they wanted to increase its range, so they put tanks in the gas tank. Oh, well, fuel tanks, not gas tanks, in the leading edges.
Now, what does that mean, then?
Well, the wing of the plane, there's the front part there. They call that the leading edge. So they were modifying these leading edges to put fuel tanks in. And that was done in, I'm quite sure we did the very first ones, because there was, I think we did there. There again, see, I was still new. I didn't know as much about what went on as I did later. So I got put over there. And at first I was the only woman on the crew, and I did the electrical. I had to connect up the electrical, and there's where I learned to do electrical checkout. We had a little cart, and all we did was to see that, check it out to make sure there was continuity in it.
So you had a voltmeter?
Well, I guess that's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was on a cart,
mm-hmm.
and we did the electrical checkout. And then, while I was there, a new woman was brought in. And now she is the one that I had. We became pretty good friends. And I had an apartment in Pasadena in the upstairs of an old house that had been, they had made part of it into an apartment. Well, it wasn't big enough to have a roommate, but I did have a kitchen. So she was staying with relatives in Reseda, but it was hard for her to get to work. And she didn't know anybody out here except those relatives. So we kind of struck up a friendship. And she came over and saw my landlady, and they rented her a room. So she didn't have a kitchen. And then she had the bath. It wasn't connected to her room, but she had her own room and bath. Of course, I had room and bath, and I let her use my kitchen so she could cook in there. And so that was very nice, and she worked on those leading edges. But that's...
How long had you been in electrical assembly before you were transferred to
checkout? Oh, well, it wasn't really a transfer. It was just, we were working on the benches, and it was just a new assignment. You went over to that.
Mm.
I've forgotten what year they did do those leading edges. I think it was probably in 44. Probably 44.
But up until then, you basically were doing, setting up circuits and doing soldering.
Yes, and doing a lot of soldering.
Uh-huh.
I learned to solder.
Now, did you have to provide your own soldering iron or solder? Or was
no, we checked the soldering irons out of from the tool kit. We had tool checks. We checked them out.
And this was bench work, basically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What was the physical setup of the? How many women would be in the? This was all women at that point.
Mostly. There was one man that worked there, and I think he was 4F. And then later on there was an older man there, but mostly it mm-hmm. was women. And, it depended upon what you had to do. Sometimes if there were little things, maybe they'd have three of us lined up along. Sometimes maybe two. Maybe if this was a great big assembly, maybe you worked at the workbench all by yourself.
Oh.
It just depended.
People on both sides of the benches, or just
sometimes,
uh-huh.
sometimes there could be, or if what we were working on covered the whole bench, then we didn't really have exact places to sit. We had our own toolboxes, and as I recall, I thought we had a drawer that we put a padlock on. Now, it seemed like we did, and we generally sat in about the same place, but if this was needed, or if we suited our position to what the work was,
Well, how many women, people, since there were a couple of men, would be in one crew under the one lead in this case?
Oh, let's see. I suppose I think there were about 10 to 12 that were regular. Then every once in a while they'd bring in a new person, or maybe we got so busy they'd bring in other people for a while. Or, see, we were right next to the plumbing, and I told you about the time they brought the tubes over for us to take, and that woman thought I did such a good job. I guess that's one time I really did better than the So you see, it was, you know, they could rearrange it easily.
It but on like average, it was the 10 if you want
to... It seemed to me there were about 10 of them.
In the period that you were working in that department, say from 43 to 44 when you started doing some of the checkout work, how much change was there among that group of, say, 10 of you? I'm wondering about this, about turnover and absenteeism.
Oh, it seemed like the same people. There wasn't much absenteeism. No, most of those women showed up every day. One of them had a child to support. And I don't recall that any of them left.
Hmm.
Oh, there must have been some of that, but there were a lot of us that were there for a long time. Oh, I remember we did have one woman. She came in for a while. She had, I think she had come from Austria, though she was a citizen. And when we had to make out our income tax, oh, she was so bothered. I can't remember her name now, but I told her it wasn't very hard. And if she wanted to bring it in, I would help her make up her income tax. So I made out her income tax for her. Because then things were relatively simple. They hadn't come up with all these deductions, or if they had, we didn't have them, you know. And, oh, she was so grateful that when she went out to lunch the next day or something, she brought me a candy bar. I'd forgotten about that. But here was this... Well, I felt kind of sorry for her. She was a good worker, but I think just the idea of this income tax is good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember helping her with that. I also remember that there were some men that were experimental mechanics that worked over, I think they were electrical installers. They worked at the other end of the hangar. Well, maybe not clear the other end, but way over there. And... then they had to come over and work on our, I don't know what they were doing now on our benches. I don't remember that. But I remember they had some things to figure out. And I hope I didn't tell you this before. And they had to take square roots. And some of them didn't know how to do it. And they were sitting there squawking so about it that I said, well, here, I'll do it for you. Well, they wondered about that. I said, well, sure. And I remember I did their square root. So this one fellow, now he was a good mechanic. I could never begin to approach him on that. But whenever he needed any square root, he brought it to me. And I learned then that many people that had graduated from high school out here in California seemed to be rather weak in math.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that they couldn't add and divide, but when it came to wondering how you did a thing,
mm-hmm.
I was really surprised. See, I had gone to school back in Iowa where we didn't have a lot of special courses, but when it came to grammar and math
mm-hmm.
and some of those things, it was hammered into it. So we knew it. Well, and I was just amazed that this young man could not be square
mm-hmm.
root because we had that in seventh grade. Well, I don't know, maybe anyway. I did the square root for a while. I remember that.
Now, do you remember what the other people on the crew were like? You mentioned one woman who was supporting a child.
Well, some of them were younger, some were older, and of course, some of these young ones seemed a little frivolous, but then, you know, they were, but I will say this, almost all of them were easy to get along with and easy to know. They were, I don't want to use the word nice, although I guess that would fit them, but they were would you say companionable? I mean, you know, they weren't mean or you didn't see much jealousy. There was some, but not. They were easy to work with. I liked them.
Do you remember among this crew how many of the women would have been the women who had not been working before the war but who did come into the workforce in Telford during the war?
Well, now this, well, let's see. Oh, most of them, I can think of about three, but a lot of them were younger women that if they hadn't been working there, they would have probably been trying to get a job someplace. Or, of course, you never can tell. See, they might have been married if there hadn't been so many men. But it seems to me there were only about two, well, there was this woman that was supporting this child. Then there was this older woman part of the time. And then there was one a young woman whose husband worked there, too. But most of these, several of them, I should say, not most, but several of them were unattached women.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had worked back in New York. They had worked before, not doing this kind of work. But I remember the one, and she seemed to be pretty good, had worked in some kind of a factory back in New York. I don't remember now, but I can't.
And what did your friend, this is where you met this friend then?
Well, met her again. I had seen her before. Oh, or are you talking about the one I met on the Leading Edges?
The one that you met on, oh, that was someone that you met on the Leading Edges then?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you one other thing about these women. Was there much talk about family members, husbands, brothers, fathers, in the service?
Yes. I better not tell you, this one woman, the one that was supporting the child, I remember the other woman bawled out for saying that her husband was in the service, but they had evidently been unhappy and I think separated before. And she said she hoped he'd have the grace to get himself killed, so she'd get, I guess, so the little girl would be insured. But there was some talk of it, yes, because some of them did have, I remember the one, had a husband that was a prisoner in the Philippines. And then I told you about this one who later married the supervisor. Her husband was in the service. But she didn't talk very much about him because, you know, she was more interested in this lead man that later was the supervisor. Well, you know, they talked just like any bunch of women about.
Well, I was wondering how much anxiety about the war and family members being involved in the war was expressed at work.
There was some of that, quite a bit. But, you know, it was, what can you do about it? And then, you'd hear once in a while, they'd say, I got a letter or something. But most of those, I can only recall about those three that really had a husband in the service. The rest of them, well, let's see. No, I think they were about the only ones that, there was one who, there were a couple of them whose husbands worked there at Lockheed, and they had the children. I don't remember how many. Well, the one woman's husband, I think, was 4F. And so they had come from somewhere back in the mid-day.
Were there any so-called Okies in this crew?
Well, there may have been, they weren't exactly Okies. No, they were pretty nice. I would say that some of them were not very sophisticated, or at least it didn't seem like it to me. But, no, I wouldn't say they, well, there was one that was, she hadn't come from Oklahoma. I think she'd come from Ohio. that's the way she was. You know, one thing about working with a crew like that, you begin to accept people for what they are. And they're different than you are, maybe, but you find out in a lot of ways they're like you are. And they were mostly the kind that if anybody really needed something, they were unkind. You know, they weren't unkind or anything like that. Many of them had different ideas, but I think that's why I began to accept people for what they were, because I found out that sometimes some of these people that were, well, not as sophisticated or didn't have the same ideals I have, they were the ones you could count on, or you could see how good they would be to somebody else if someone else needed something. And they were not as critical of other people, maybe, you know, because they just weren't. So I think that's about the time I began to learn that.
Were there, at that point in that crew, were there any black or Mexican women?
No. Now, there was one Mexican inspector. He was, I don't know, he was a, why he was there, I don't remember. But I do remember he had gone to school here in California. I can't remember what his name was, but it was a Spanish surname. And so I've forgotten how I happened to mention one day something about him being Spanish. He says, I'm not Spanish, I'm Mexican. He said, I don't know why Mexicans want to claim they're Spanish. He says, there's nothing wrong with being a Mexican. And I said, well, of course there isn't. And he liked to be called a Mexican. And but he was a nice-looking fella. He was clean cut and seemed to know his job very well. He was an inspector. He inspected our soldering. And, of course, he was an inspector, so that was, he made a little more than we did. And, I do remember his telling me that. So if anybody ever, so even to this day, I'm more inclined to say that somebody's a Mexican, because, I don't feel that that's anything derogatory about him. There's nothing wrong with being a Mexican. That's what he told me.
Now, when you, before you started working on the Leading Edge and met this woman who you became friends with, would you socialize with the other women in the department outside of the...
Not very much, because they all lived over that, they lived out in the valley, North Hollywood or something, and I lived in Pasadena. And I still mostly either had a ride or took the bus. And so I didn't, once in a while when we all went bowling, but that was about all.
And what was your lead like in this work? Because it sounds like you were doing this about a year before you started working on the Leading Edge.
I think I was. What was our the lead?
Your lead man.
So he was nice. He was a young fellow. I think he was deferred because he was in an important job. He's the one that this girl later married.
Oh.
But he was nice to work for. Actually, most of the supervisors and lead people at Lockheed were nice. But that's just the way it is. Once in a while you'd meet one that was kind of arrogant or something. But that's the way it is throughout the world. You know, there's always a few. But no, this fellow was very nice.
Now, how did you happen to become selected to start doing this work on the Leading Edge and the checkout work?
I don't really remember. I guess I don't remember why they just sent me over there. Maybe it was because everything I did was low down. And and it didn't require any great strength. And on some of those jig boards, sometimes you had to pull that around to get it to the right place. And sometimes I know it would take more than one of them would have to help me. And I don't know if that was why or if maybe the day they needed somebody, I didn't have a job and everybody else, I had finished mine, everybody else was working. I don't remember. I know I was sent over there.
Then did that mean that you were physically placed in a different crew?
I was in a different crew, yes. I was in a different crew, had a different lead name.
And you say initially you were the only woman on that crew.
Yes, and then Jeanette was brought in, and there never were more than the two of us, two women over.
How did it feel to you, moving out of this crew that was largely, or almost all female, too, then being the only woman on the crew?
Oh, it didn't bother me. I'd been raised with brothers, and so, and by then I'd been at Lockheed quite a while. And I remember thinking I was learning something new, and that maybe that would mean that I'd get a different classification. Mm-hmm. So I remember I was quite pleased about it, you know, doing this electrical checkup, because I hadn't done that before. And so for that, I know I was pleased. Then at break time, if I wanted to go back over there and sit with those girls, I could. But I don't think I did it very often because we only had a 10-minute break. Mm. See, that was considered, they had, they came up with this smoking period. That was before I'd been into electrical. I think that started, that must have started in 43. And because so many of the men were complaining that they couldn't work for 4 hours without having a smoke. And they were not supposed to smoke in the lavatories, and they could not smoke while they were working. So they started this, it was first called smoking period. Then it got to be called rest period. By the time I got into the office, it was called coffee break. But it started out as smoking period, at least in the shop.
But do you recall you would take, before Jeanette started working, you would take your break with the men, or you would usually try and go back and take it with the women?
It just depended. Mm-hmm. Usually, while the rest of them were smoking, I'd eat some kind of fruit, maybe an apple or something. Mm-hmm. I'd eat something because I didn't smoke. And
did you socialize with the men during the breaks or at lunchtime?
We were friendly, mm-hmm. and I believe I went back over and ate my lunch with those women I knew over there. But these fellows were not nice to work with.
And what was that lead like?
He was good. He was very businesslike. I think all of those men were married. And yes, I know they were. He got, let's see, I think, I remember reading in the Star before I left, I think he got to be a foreman. He worked up, he stayed with the company. Because I'd see his name once in a while, you know, when I had, not very often, but once in a while.